everybody jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip, the hip, it, hip, 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 how you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp enough.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's the end of the week. That means I have a couple of friends here in studio with me to talk about the news of the week. And in this case, we actually are all drinking coffee. We don't have to pretend that we're not drinking beer. Wait, how did I say that? Anyway, we have Patrick Elabash, the owner of Elabash Jewelry. Patrick, welcome. This is your first time. Welcome to the wrap.
It is. Thank you for having me, Andrew.
Absolutely. You come highly recommended.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I know you as well, but you I had people tell me, you should have Patrick on sometime. Like, yeah, obviously. He'd be great for it. We didn't have anybody else to put in, so we had Alan Gray come back.
I'm so sorry. I apologize. The list isn't long, and it's not very esteemed, but I topped it. Right after Patrick this week.
Oh, hold on. I think we couldn't hear you just a second ago. Go ahead, Alan.
I couldn't hear myself either.
We censored you. Sorry.
Hey, listen, I don't blame an inch of what you just did. I would do it too. Any opportunity to keep me quiet, do it.
So both of you are downtown guys, downtown Pensacola guys. So yep. Let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on downtown that is, you know, a lot of times it's not like the in the news thing, but it's still important stuff that's happening. And, you know, we kind of sometimes you forget that these things are going on. This hashtag project is a pretty big deal. It's an ongoing, massive, this visual landscape kind of change to downtown. Alan, I know it's a project that you're big on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be one of those transformative moments for downtown. You know, it's an introduction for more amenities for pedestrians, bicyclists. It's going to keep the cars on the road, but sort of diet down their usage of the whole, you know, right of way.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to add and sometimes triple the amount of trees that actually create canopy, not just little crepe myrtles that are dinky after 20 years. They're this big around the trunk. We're talking big trees that will actually envelop and create a canopy for us to walk under and enjoy in all months of the year. Because you guys know how tough it is to walk downtown as you get into the June, Julys, and Augusts. It's a little warm. I do it every day, but, you know, I'm only out of the office for those 20, 30, 40 minutes of walking, and it's not so bad. But if you're going to spend time and spend money in downtown, go from shop to shop, from boutique to restaurant to maybe the bar in the evening, you need to have some sort of idea that you can do it in a very easy way. And trees make that possible, really.
And this is going to be, remind me, this is Main and Cedar, which is the street east and west just south of Main. And then is it Balin and Palafox? Is that the, am I off by a block?
No, you're not off, but you got to understand it in phases. There's phase one, two, and three.
Okay.
Phase one right now, we're talking about Main and Palafox down to Cedar. And then from Cedar below, I think, is phase two. And phase three is the Zaragoza portion of the hashtag. All the way over to Tarragona.
Which is eventually going to connect Cedar all the way through to you'll be able to walk over to, like, Wahoo Stadium is kind of the idea eventually, long term.
The idea is one could grab some grits of Yaya.
Right, at Fish House, sure.
Migrate and migrate and migrate and wind up at the stadium.
Yeah, which is a great interconnectivity and will alleviate some of the pedestrian demand on, you know, Main Street, obviously. But I love what you're talking about. And we're seeing the same concept again and again, Patrick, of roads that were built stupidly is the word I want. Because you build a road for 60 and then you put a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit on it. And we know what's normal to drive because we know what's safe. That's what adults do, is you adapt to the circumstances. And so now we're having to basically redesign all of these streets so that you feel comfortable driving the speed that is actually safe given the environment, right?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, some of the changes I've seen over the years, just some small steps many years ago is when Palafox installed the four-way stops kind of down. It slowed down traffic a little bit and allowed people to look and see the shops that are there. But then some bigger things that Alan's talking about with this hashtag, and you look at Jefferson Street, which I don't know if that's officially part of the hashtag project.
It is.
But if you look at the East Garden District and what the city, along with some private individuals like Chad Henderson Group, have done with that area, that's all brand new, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Go ahead, Alan.
No, I want to mention something there. So right now, today, those brand new trees off the truck are creating more shade than the trees that we've had on Palafox in Maine for the past 20 years. They're just a different design of tree. We're talking about Tupelo, we're talking about cypress, maples, red oaks, cathedral oaks. These are design trees that we use in the urban environments for street tree. They're perfect for it. They let the businesses, you know, again, enjoy the canopy.
The canopy is elevated so you can see the business underneath.
They absorb the first hour of rain.
Yeah.
Your storm drains stay clear for the first hour of a rainstorm. It's a total different thing when you get a designed street tree.
Now, will it also I mean, and I'm thinking long term, but are we talking like 10 years from now, we're going to start to actually see tree tunnel kind of visuals?
That's exactly the idea. It's 1.5 extra feet of canopy from the center of the tree trunk every year.
Oh,
in
wow.
These trees, 1.5 feet out, 1.5 feet out. You take that 10 years, you've got an extra 10 feet. I'm sorry, 20 total feet in
right,
10
each
years
side, right?
off of the center of the tree.
So, I mean, this is transformative visual scape.
If you love trees, get behind hashtag, folks. That's my only point to you. If you love a walk down downtown, get behind hashtag.
If ever I get Alan on the show and I can get him talking about roads, bridges, or progressive street design.
I have other interests.
Do you?
Yeah, Star Wars, and trees, and streets, and lighting, and...
So Patrick, I'm kind of curious to talk to you about this, because, you know, we haven't talked about it in a while, but it tends to come up periodically. The scooters downtown, has that... You're a business owner downtown.
Sure.
Have you seen this as a benefit, as a problem, as a, you know, what's your perspective? Actually having an operative business where they're not supposed to really be, but still kind of still are.
Sure. We do still see them, although they're not supposedly allowed on Palafox.
Right.
We don't see a ton of people using them during the day, but at night it's a little more, you see them more regularly.
Okay.
But the scooters are a kind of a touchy subject downtown. We are not huge fans of them so far. I know the city is altering the rules and trying to tweak things during this trial period. It started out as a great idea, but it's going to be real interesting when this trial period is up and to see what the city decides they want to do with them.
Yeah, you know, I was downtown I was at Jackson's the other night, and they're having their spring tasting, and I was there for that. And I'm not normally downtown at night unless I happen to be there for some event like I was. And normally when I'm there, it's like for a press conference or for something at the port or whatever. But I was there more towards evening. It was like 7 o'clock, I think. And I saw a bunch of them and I thought, oh, I've never really seen people using them. And so, like you say, it's more of a nighttime kind of thing that they're used.
Right.
Okay. All right. Which I know is the problem when it's late at night, which they're now prohibited, but still, you know.
Yeah. What we see is it still impacts us during the day. I mean, the common scenario in my store is while they're not allowed on Palafox, you know, I'm helping an older person out to their car, and you have a sidewalk that's blocked by scooters, by somebody not following the rules the night before. And we've seen enough of that to not be huge fans of this, but it'll be interesting.
Are they still scattered and strewn about? I mean, is that continues to be an issue?
Well, the user can put them wherever they want when they're done, except for they cannot park them on Palafox because it won't let them check them out.
Okay.
You can't technically check out of it. So it'll be still sitting there charging you. So that's the cross.
Okay.
That's how you don't do it. That's the barb.
I gotcha.
You have to park it somewhere where it's allowed. You know, in my opinion, it would be nice if we had a bit more control and a bit more responsibility on the vendor that brings them and that's making the money.
Sure.
What things they can do is step up the retrieval and the orderly placement of. And they're doing a pretty good job about the placement. It's just, how do you chase the 45 users during the afternoon, the 68 in the evening? It's a tough thing to chase after. But I don't see it as a thing that's going to go away, but it is going to be something that's going to be a hot topic going forward.
I will say this much, and you tell me if I'm wrong. I believe that now and forever henceforth, there will always be more people using the scooter than the ferry. Oh, did I say it out loud?
Wow.
Oh, geez,
so
no.
You hit something, which is the micro and the macro. So when we talk about transit or different types of solutions, Uber is a cab company killer.
Sure. Although
these
they're partnering with cabs now. They're partnering with the cab companies in New York now.
And they should. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's smart. But when you talk about this, we actually would define this. I could easily construe this as microtransit. So if I had a remote parking lot where I would station 40 to 50 of these scooters,
right,
and I know that the downtown's the destination,
sure,
and they have to get back to that remote lot again, I would call these things circulator systems that were micro. Because they're on demand and they don't have to own them and
but at this
if they were used responsibly.
Right. But also at this point, we don't have that level of demand and scarcity for parking. You know, that is, I mean, we might be getting there, but we're not quite there yet.
Well, you go look at any Escambia Citizens Watch and apparently we don't allow you to park in downtown. That's the word on the street. But the truth is we have tens of thousands of spaces. In fact,
and Spring Street is free.
I have 3 parking spaces for every citizen of Pensacola in the city of Pensacola. There is 150,000 offices and 52,000 residents.
Dang now, you with your math.
Sorry about
Stop
my
it with
I
your
apologize.
Math.
I apologize. I apologize. Your narrative isn't fact-based. Apologize.
Patrick, I know parking for years, as long as I've lived here, parking has been an issue. And of course, with more development, you have, you know, I think we've mostly gotten beyond the lots getting, you know, sucked up by development, like the Y took away lots and the back of the museum took away lots and whatever. But from your perspective, parking at the moment is working, is a problem.
I think parking, we've got some good people in charge of it. I'm a huge fan of Lisa Dees that handles this for the city.
Used to run what DIB she was on before, right?
She did. So we've got some good people in charge. You know, we like to talk about this as a growing pain and the success of downtown. But I'm ready to start talking about some of these solutions that we need to push forward with. And I don't think people are complaining about the price of parking. I think it's more or less the confusion.
You don't listen to me talk about this, obviously.
What's that sign color mean? Does this sign color mean I'm booted or towed?
Yeah, right. Go ahead, Patrick.
And so most of the people are complaining about some of these private lot owners that have a little more higher ticket prices and stuff like that, that they're doing a little more aggressive in the enforcement. But also from the city stand side, it's the confusion of the app. The machines are not working. These are things we just got to get better at, because I think the general public is unhappy with where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a longtime opponent of pay parking. I will go out of my way to not pay for parking. But also, just when the technology doesn't work right, like we were in D.C., and one time I was parking, and, you know, this meter wouldn't let me pay for more than 10 minutes, no matter what I did. This meter wouldn't let me pay at all. This meter, you know, just like I had to get to the fourth meter to finally get one that would even work for my region. But that was, I mean, it's a unique problem, but still, it's, you know, these are the kinds of things you run into. Hey, we do need to take a quick break. We've got a couple of friends in here, Alan Gray and Patrick Elabash. It is The Wrap. That means we're talking about anything that's on everybody's mind.
Dependable.
Welcome back. It's 8:48 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. It is Friday, therefore it is The Wrap. I've got Alan Gray and Patrick Elabash here in studio with me. And one of the things that the county, you know, Escambia County has been working on, they did a lot of things last night. You know, they sent basically a whine and moan letter to FPL PSC. And I think wisely, Commissioner Bender asked not just for the PSC to have a hearing on rates here, but to have an additional, maybe the alternative as of a town hall. At least so the PSC would actually have to face the public. Wouldn't that be an interesting, long, arduous night? And Commissioner Chairman Bergosh agreed to write that into the letter, so that's a good thing. They passed that, of course. Then the complaint letter against SB 620, which I have been railing on. But actually, you know, that's an interesting question, because Alan Gray, you're a business guy. Patrick, you're a business guy. The premise of SB 620 is that if government writes an ordinance that hurts your business more than 15% profit, you would be able to sue them and get the money back from them for the loss of business revenue that they caused you. I think it's a terrible law, even though I get the point of the law, because it seems to me like it would hamstring whatever the local government wants to do. But you're a business owner. Do you have a thought about this law?
Gosh, I'll have to tell you, I'm ignorant of this. I don't know a ton about it, to be honest with you.
No worries.
I listened to you yesterday.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it does put you in a very odd spot as a lawmaker. I mean, you're going to sit there and have to consider the ramification of lawsuit after lawsuit for what you say on the dais already. Now you have an extra, you know, what do you call it, arrow they can sling at you.
Right.
I think it's just punitive on those that are trying to do things. And frankly, if you're in good faith working to improve your community and you're doing things and passing laws that do that, and you're being a good steward and a good servant for the public, I don't see it as a thing that can really help you, because you might have to make a decision that, you know, you might terminate an exit on the highway or add an exit on the highway.
Right. And if
someone's farm might
loss,
go out of business because of that. I don't know. You can't milk dairy cows if there's too many noises. I don't know.
Yeah. No,
and
that,
I hate
and
to
that's,
see the punitive, you know, be another consideration. It might cause more paralysis by analysis, which I hate in local government. I want people to act.
What do you mean? Every local elected body is very quick, decisive, and clear every single time. The city council in Pensacola handles an issue one
sarcasm
time
warning.
And then they're done.
Sarcasm.
What are you talking
warning.
About?
Sarcasm warning. Your radio is emanating sarcasm. Stand by. Do not, you know, call your elected officials.
Yeah, I absolutely want the businesses to be involved in the process of crafting the legislation. This just seems to me to give them a big, big old either a veto, which is the other half of legislation, or a, you know, punishment after the fact to, you know, because the whole point is that you might be passing an ordinance that's going to harm businesses if the businesses are doing something bad. And, you know, like the internet cafes of a few years ago, for example. And anyway, that wasn't the one I wanted to ask you about, though. I wanted to ask you, last night we also started down the road of broadband for the county. And basically what they did is they kind of split the project in two. South of 10 Mile is going to be more oriented around the advanced traffic management system and providing broadband that FDOT says they need to run that system. And also other things will come along with it. And then the north of 10 Mile, which FDOT does not care about, but is a big deal for the people who live there and are having trouble getting broadband. And they're going to work kind of on both fronts. I have a lot of questions about this proposal. I am not generally a supporter, and I'm worried about things like technology and entitlement and everything else. But I have lost this argument. The argument has passed me by. Alan, you your face so changed.
I remembered last year we were working on this in Walton County, and I had to get Googled by Greg Weiler, a partner of Elon Musk and Satellite One. And I thought it was just the funniest thing I've ever heard of, that I had to wait for a response back from his handlers to say, Mr. Gray, they don't think that we need you to talk with Mr. Weiler at the moment. We were offering alternatives for what his company basically does is the Satellite One,
right.
But it's Terabase. So it's in satellites that are affixed to implements on the ground. Radio towers.
Geosynchronous
towers.
Orbit.
Say again?
Are you saying geosynchronous or geoattached?
Has the same technology in your home.
Okay.
Your receiver's the same. However, they can broadcast it from the water towers and the radio towers near your home.
Okay.
And it's a way to get that last mile coverage for those rural areas, rural communities, of which almost all five of our counties have a rural component in the north.
Right.
Until you hit Washington Homes. So it's a way for the people to get internet that's cost competitive, sub $100 per month. For really high speed internet, and it's not a bad
gigabit
deal.
Speed.
It's extraordinarily fast. I mean, they literally put a receiver in the back of a Chevy pickup truck bed, and drove into the woods and got good signal out there in Walton County. It was a good test. So this stuff works. The thing that they're talking about now is smart, putting fiber in on every county, every city, and every state project. Well, the state's already doing it. State already puts fiber underground on every project they do. The county, in my opinion, should follow suit, because if you don't, you're going to be paying somebody for that need. You're going to need the data in the future, and you're going to be paying somebody for it. Why not put it in now while you're digging the road up or putting in
So you say even with current technology and shifting technology, we should still invest in what is at the moment possibly future legacy technology.
I need fiber optic to get the radio broadcasting stuff juiced to the high level so that the wireless connection to those last 45 homes in that neighborhood can connect to that wireless broadcasting or the 110 homes. But I need the backbone of fiber optic.
You need to get it close enough that the other stuff can come in.
Close enough. That's the problem in our north ends of the county, is people haven't laid that infrastructure in yet. And it does need to get laid in. The fiber optic is a good thing to do, and the county ought to do it, and the county ought to own it. The city, on every road project, ought to be burying fiber. 256 strand fiber in every city project. You'd be wise to do it. I don't sell fiber. I'm not a salesman of fiber. I do not benefit from this whatsoever.
Just an advocate, which is fine.
But I know where the future is going, and I know what our demands are going to be, and it's going to be data thirsty. Our needs are going to be data focused, and that's it, period.
Patrick, as a business owner, your experience downtown, your thoughts about putting, it's a lot of money, but it is a lot of money in this case coming from the federal government. So it's our money, but it pretends not to be.
Well, just like everybody else, we're obviously very dependent on internet. And when it goes down downtown, you hear from just about everybody. We have duplicate internet at our office just to hopefully, kind of
just in case
protect
wow.
us from that. But
same here.
My father-in-law lives in a rural area of North Alabama, and the internet's terrible, and it's a challenge, and I sympathize with those people, and it'd be nice for them to have that opportunity.
Back to Patrick Elabash and Alan Gray. Patrick, I know one of the things that you're excited about is we're coming into that time of year where we're back, baby. I mean, post-COVID, hopefully, fingers crossed, hopefully. we're post-COVID, and Pensacola is back to being everything that it's always been with events, right?
Gosh, this is a great time of the year for downtown Pensacola. Leaving work last night, it was nice to be in some traffic and see all the people downtown. But
I just want to pause you for a second. It was nice to be in traffic.
Did you hear that? Did
you? It's okay. Go ahead. I understand the sentiment. Go ahead.
Just look at this weekend. I mean, tonight I'm going to dinner at Angelina's and taking my kids to Moana at the Pensacola Little Theater.
How nice.
You've got opening weekend for the Blue Wahoos. Tonight's the first game. Tomorrow night's fireworks. Palafox Market tomorrow morning. And that goes along with all the shopping and restaurants that are there, every day of the week. And so it's a wonderful time to be downtown. The weather's awesome, and come support us.
Absolutely. It's kind of interesting. We're at Jackson's the other day, and they were talking about staff shortages. They still haven't been able to open up a lot of their restaurant, because it's Great Southern restaurants, right? And they just can't get people to work. They cannot get, and they don't want to just hire anybody because they have a certain, you know, brand reputation to uphold. But it's hard. Like Angelina, as you said, you know, not open for lunch. Right. And, you know, Jackson still. And it just have you seen this in your company? Still hard to find employees, or
it is. Staff shortages are not just for restaurants. I think it's affecting all industries. And
to be
so
sure.
We are struggling with it, too. And you just got to kind of keep pushing. My dad last night asked me about this very subject, and he said, "How are we doing?" And he just looked at me and said, you got to make it happen. You're going to have to work a little bit harder. And so that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I worry about these. The main issues I worry about are also our national issues, you know, shortages in transportation. Those things are breaking down projects right now. I know, okay.
It still surprises me every time. Like the Cervantes project, the pedestrian crosswalks get delayed because we can't get arm bars for the crosswalks. I mean, just that kind of thing where you think, I thought we were past this. We are clearly not past all of that.
We are not. And in my industry, which is, you know, smart cities technology, is greatly impacted because these microchips, different technologies that I have to onboard into my systems to make them functional. You know, I relate to a supply shortage overseas to get them to here to tell my customer that this is actually going to be 18 weeks away
yeah.
or 22 weeks away.
I mean,
that's too far. I mean, that's mind numbing.
And then the city of Gulf Breeze adapted to this by taking a project for construction that they're now individually bidding out component parts of the new, I think it's the police station. Like they're bidding out steel. Like this, instead of letting a sub do it, they're settling contracts on steel so that they can lock it in, get it at all, and at a price that they can not have to wait 6 months for it to be 50% more. Or whatever. I mean, it's just, that's smart, but the fact that you have to operate in that environment is crazy.
We're adapting in that we're already anticipating the needs of our customers, and we're going ahead and bringing those items in. And we luckily have some warehouse purchases over the Southeast United States that have been able to facilitate that. I just like, we know we're going to be selling this many downlights. We'll
yeah.
go ahead and ship them, bring them in. Put them in the warehouse. We'll sell them.
Well, that is, we always run out of time. I mean, we didn't even talk about their Cervantes border wall, which I know both of you are big supporters of. Hey, put a fence down in the middle of a soon-to-be thriving area. Maybe it'll make everything better. Patrick Elbash, Alan.